This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Happy Yule to everyone. This is Lana, and we're back with another conversation on health. Why? Well, without it, you can't do much, can you? The subject of health and diet is something I always like to return to in the regular rotation of all the other conspiratorial topics, since it's important to look at the big picture holistically, as each part plays a role. Politics, health, and culture all play together. I'm happy to introduce Dr. Matthew Buckley in his first interview on the subject of how Monsanto is destroying the brains and health of everyone. Matthew's credentials include a Bachelor's of Science in Environmental Health, a Doctorate of Chiropractic, a Doctor of Pastoral Science and Medicine, and he practices kinesiology, acupuncture, and neuromodulation technique. Well, do you know about microglial activation? How about pathogenic bacteria overgrowth? How about microbiome or glyphosate? Well, you're about to, and stick around because later Matthew shares some interesting yet creepy information regarding parasites, the epidemic that is here now. Welcome, Matthew. How are things in Austin, Texas?
Gray and dreary, but overall not bad. I can't complain coming from the Midwest where I know it's going to be a lot colder up there. So I don't complain too much about winters in Texas.
So as an alternative practitioner, what drew you to the field of natural medicine?
In my late teens, I started to develop chronic fatigue and what's called fibromyalgia, widespread aches and pains of unknown origin. And I made it through undergrad, you know, suffering through all that, and eventually took a job working at John Deere for a couple of years and was laid off from there. And I was at a pivotal point in my life where I needed to figure out what I was going to do while simultaneously dealing with the issues of the fatigue and the pain. And I'd always been somewhat interested in chiropractic. And so I ended up making the decision that I needed to figure out what was going on, because the conventional system didn't appear to have any, you know, viable answers for me. In fact, it seemed to make things worse. So that's, in a nutshell, that's pretty much what got me into it.
And what drew you down to Texas?
One of my best friends was actually going to UT when I was still in chiropractic college, and he encouraged me to come check it out and came down and visited. I knew that I wanted to be amongst a open-minded community, you know, and away from the winters of the Midwest, And that's how I got here.
Well, you wrote an excellent article titled "How Monsanto is Destroying the Brains and Health of Everyone," and we also linked this up. And you begin the article explaining microglial activation. So tell us what this is and how it works.
So the microglia are immune cells that are found within the brain and the spinal cord. And the microglia serve an important function in helping our brains to defend them, to defend the neurons from attack from foreign invaders, and to help to clean up debris that may exist around the neurons. But they can become overly excited due to various stimulators, and that stimulation will cause a persistent inflammation, which breaks down the neuronal cells and therefore will lead to neurodegeneration.
Now, what is, you also mentioned pathogenic bacteria overgrowth. So what is that process?
So our bodies have 10 times more microbes living on us and in us than we have cells of the body. And if we're going to be healthy, we have to have a good balance with those microbes. And we know that certain microbes serve more health-promoting properties, and others serve more health-degenerating properties. And so by the things that we consume, we will affect the balance of those microbes. And the more carbohydrates, sugar, and toxic foods and materials that we consume, the things that we put on our body really shift the microbial balance, and it can drive it to become dominant in different types of strains that you don't really want overgrown. And research has shown that when people consume things like Roundup, in small amounts over a period of time, that you can be prone to becoming dominant in certain types of pathogenic, like Clostridia species, which is a specific type of bacteria. At the same time, it'll impair the ability for the good bacteria like Lactobacillus acidophilus from being the dominant strain. And when you have those pathogenic microbes that are there in conjunction with what tends to be yeast or fungal overgrowth as well, that will compromise the barrier of the intestinal tract, and it'll allow for the cell walls of those pathogenic bacteria to initiate an immune response to that. And so that creates this whole cascade of immunological events that triggers that microglial activation in the brain.
Yeah, you mentioned Roundup, and I know the research is out there, but for some reason, it's okay. It's still being used. So you're saying that Roundup is basically disrupting our microbiome or our flora and fauna in the body. So then what happens as a result of that?
Well, you can pretty much tie that into virtually every form of chronic disease that exists. So the research is very clear that when you have that increase in permeability within the intestinal tract, that's one of the prime factors for autoimmune disorders, okay? But all these neurodegenerative conditions, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, if you look at the research is going in the direction that they recognize that much of those problems have at their core this issue of microglial activation. So if anybody's going to get a grip on those types of problems, they have to address the issues that are driving microglial activation. And you can't stop that without looking at what's going on within the gut.
So what's the name of that enzyme again in Roundup that's upsetting our bacteria balance?
Well, it's called glyphosate, but there's also some research to show that, it's not just glyphosate. Glyphosate appears to be a problem, but some of the other ingredients that are found within Roundup, which is Monsanto's, patented version of glyphosate. So Roundup is basically glyphosate along with a few other chemicals. And within those chemicals, there are certain chemicals in there that appear to be even more toxic than Roundup itself. But glyphosate is a patented antibiotic. So the fact that it would alter the ecology of the intestines shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. It's also a known chelator, which means that it'll bind to certain minerals, and that's another core component of the issues of chronic degenerative disease.
So it's robbing you of the good minerals in your body as well.
Yeah, it's robbing you of the good minerals, and it's important to point out that this issue of mineral depletion has gotten worse, really, certainly over the last 100 years. There's a Senate document 264 was published in 1936, which detailed the problem of mineral depletion in the soil at that point in time. And the authors were lamenting about how unfortunate it was that their generation was having to suffer from the ill consequences of mineral depletion at that point in time relative to generations past. And that was well before Monsanto really became, what it is today. So if that was a problem then, and then you can look at the mineral status in foods that have been sampled since that time, and you can see that the mineral qualities and quantities have actually decreased considerably even from then. So what we're left with is a minerally deficient body being subjected to a whole host of toxins that, we never saw over 100 years ago. Our bodies weren't equipped for that. So now I can't say that Roundup is exclusively, the cause behind all of these problems that we see, but there's certainly enough evidence to show that it's a very plausible explanation for much of what it is that we see.
Now, you mentioned microglia break down neurons. So what does that mean?
So the neurons are the cells within our brain, okay? And the microglia are a type of, they're an immune cell within the brain. And the neurons, they are engaged in communication. And so if our connections aren't able to be made within the brain, then, you know, things that you would want to have occur aren't going to occur. Like, for example, the hippocampus is an area within the brain that's associated with memory. And some of the research, you know, that's been done with regard to this microglial activation, which is actually referenced in my my blog post that you talked about, they show that the lipopolysaccharides, that was what they were studying in this study that I talked about, was driving the microglial activation primarily within the hippocampus. And the hippocampus is what we use for our memory. And so, you know, the researcher that was talking about this, he said, well, you know, the microglial activation can and does occur everywhere, but his research was primarily focused on, you know, the hippocampus. So what happens is that your brain cells just aren't going to form and function the way they're supposed to.
So you're going to become dumb, basically.
Yeah, you're going to become dumb, and your immune system is not going to work the way that it should. You're going to have a shortened life. You know, it's really alarming to look at, you know, really what's going on out there. And there's, I just can't imagine how bad things are going to be if people don't wake up right now. I mean, it's terrible.
I know, it's frightening.
The issue of chronic disease is so bad right now. And, you know, right now we've got, I grew up, you know, I was born in 1972. And so I at least didn't have the exposure to Roundup that kids are having right now, mm-hmm. from the genetically modified food. You know, that anybody that's been born within the last 20 years, you know, particularly how many kids are brought up on infant formula that is, you know, largely soy based, you know, that yeah. has some Roundup residue in there. You know, you combine that with the high fructose corn syrup that they're getting, you know, which also helps shape the terrain and put it in the direction of being pathogenically dominant with pathogenic bacteria as well as fungus. And, you know, it's no wonder that we have the disease rates that we have right now. And the only way to turn it around is to address the issues that are affecting the gut fundamentally. So we've got to start removing these things that are poisoning us.
Yeah, you mentioned babies, and I was just reading too, they're not getting enough of these key microbes because they're not having breast milk, and then they're also getting antibiotics now at a young age. It's insane. And so their immune systems basically aren't learning to work the right way, which, what does that mean? How are they going to grow up? What are they going to become?
They're going to become autistic. Are they going to have Alzheimer's at an early age, or Parkinson's? That's what they're going to have. You know, and you think about the economics of all that, it's crazy. You know, we can't afford it. We can't afford the things we're doing right now, you know?
Yeah. Also, Roundup is it's a spermicide. We know this. It kills sperm in men.
You know, I actually haven't seen that, but I'm not surprised.
Yep. So there you go. Well, you mentioned having a healthy gut, and I wanted to know if this process is amplified from eating sweets. You mentioned that. And are the sweet cravings coming from an unhealthy gut?
Yeah, a lot of them. I mean, the research is really clear that the microbalance that we have will actually influence what it is that we're going to seek in terms of food. So if you have more of a fungal or yeast dominant flora, you're going to have a tendency of actually craving sugar. And, you know, clinically, you know, in my practice, what I generally see is a significant lessening of those cravings once, you know, the ecology starts to straighten out. You know, at one point in time, I had a major sweet tooth, but now it doesn't. I really don't even like that much sugar.
That's good to know.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, if you're eating non-organic raised corn, wheat, soy, or canola, will this bad bacteria trigger the cycle that you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, I think, you know, there's going to be people that are going to say, "Well, the research isn't quite there," but, you know, it's clear in the animals, and I can tell you from what I see clinically, that the health benefits of getting people to improve their overall gut ecology is very, very dramatic in every element of their life. Energy improves, mood improves, focus, improves. So, yeah.
Well, so how do we get our gut microbes in check? I mean, do you recommend probiotics, like high dosages, or what do you do for your patients?
Probiotics are a core element of it. And, there's when it comes to healing, science or healing is both a science and an art. And so there's ways to figure out what microbes are, more beneficial for one person versus another person. So while it's generally you'll find that people will do well with just like a probiotic that's got some high amounts of Acidophilus in it and bifidobacteria. But there are different strains that will have different effects on the body. And depending upon what somebody's dealing with, it's useful to help to identify which strain they may most likely benefit from.
Are you able to test for that?
There's different ways of testing. I use, when it comes to like assessing gut ecology, I utilize energetic modes of testing. So when I say energetic, I'm talking about a form of muscle testing that can provide clues as to what's out of balance within the body. Because frankly, there's a lot of the testing that exists just isn't that good to determine what's going on within somebody's body.
Yeah, I've also heard that if your gut bacteria is in balance, that it can make people depressed. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The research is showing, again, that microglial activation is a component of depression as well as anxiety, non-situational depression. Now, not everything is going to be, microglial activation. It's not like it's like that, but there are a lot of people that have a lot of good things going on within their life but are depressed. That's non-situational depression. And there's a very good chance that within that person's body is something disrupting the flora, which is driving some of these inflammatory processes within the brain, or altering their ability to synthesize or degrade certain neurotransmitters. So, yeah.
Yeah, I also heard glyphosate, this main ingredient you've been talking about in Roundup, it also mimics the hormone estrogen. So it's got the feminizing effects for males, and also it stimulated the growth of breast cancer cells. Have you looked into this?
I did see a connection with the breast cancer cells, but not the other one.
Yeah, it's a,
I'm not surprised.
Not a good thing. Well, have you looked into any other connections into the ill effects of consuming GMOs?
Well, again, so Hippocrates is the considered the father of medicine, and he stated that all disease begins in the gut, and the research is emerging that he was right. And so I can tie virtually any form of illness back to something going on with the gut. Whether you're talking about heart disease, there's research showing that that's a cofactor. When you're talking about cancer, that's a cofactor there. Again, all the neurodegenerative conditions, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, autism, non-situational depression, anxiety. Those are the big things that actually, will drive somebody into the medical system.
I wonder what happens when pregnant women or children are eating GMOs. Do you know?
Well, again, it's gonna alter their gut ecology and shift them in the direction of disease. I mean, there's if the gut ecology again is dominant in pathogenic bacteria, they're going to have problems. They're going to have a tendency towards allergies. They're going to have a tendency towards any number of chronic disease. I mean, autoimmunity being one of the biggest.
Yeah.
Autoimmunity is one of the leading diseases, disease states that people have right now. And there's a common denominator with all autoimmunity, and that is leaky gut. That's hyperpermeability within the intestinal tract. So, you know, if you're looking at autoimmunity, then you got to look at, well, what are the factors that are actually driving, you know, the hyperpermeability within the intestines? And you can't escape, you know, looking at the effects that something like Roundup and genetically modified food might have on that.
Do you think Monsanto knows how many problems Roundup is causing, or are they just being ignorant? I know it's hard for you to know that question.
Well, I mean, I don't know anybody there, but, you know, I imagine that these people are pretty smart, you know, and they're it's said that in Monsanto's cafeteria that they don't serve GMO'd food to the employees.
Yeah, I heard that too. Well, that says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, to me, I look at all this and I don't think that this is an accident. You know?
Definitely.
I really don't.
Well, it's to the point where we need to use force with Monsanto, because, I mean, they're in bed with the government. They're basically a criminal organization, and it's destroying our planet. They're exporting seeds now across the globe, and it just seems like there's no nice way to deal with them, but it's got to be done. I mean, they're manipulating nature. That never turns out good, and they have no idea what they're meddling with or creating. The science is there to prove that it's deadly. So, in your view, what could we do with this Monsanto issue?
Well, I agree. I mean, I feel like if we don't stop Monsanto, Monsanto is going to stop us as really as a planet. I mean, there's research showing that it's, you know, it's getting into, you know, the wildlife and affecting their ability to breed and be well. And, you know, that all has a trickle up effect to us. You know, you can't separate what's going on with within our crops from how that may affect the things that we eat and the other animals that live on this planet. So if we don't stop them, we're headed for a lot of trouble. And so the question is, well, how do we really stop it? And I don't think that we have much opportunity to really stop them through the legal system that they have in place.
Forget that.
You know, you got Clarence Thomas, who was a former Monsanto lawyer who's never recused himself for any case that's actually gone before the Supreme Court involving Monsanto. You got Michael Taylor, who's the food safety czar, which is a former VP from Monsanto. You know, they've got everything that they need in place to prevent us from actually stopping them in that system. And so, you know, I only think the only way that I think that we can really turn things around is by people actually getting informed about this and doing what they can to spread the word. There is an organization called the Moms Across America that is doing testing for Roundup. They coordinated with a lab where people can actually, you know, get a urine sample to have tested for residues of Roundup. What would be useful if they would do it in conjunction with this, and I haven't found anybody that I can talk to because I found their organization recently. But what would be useful is if they did testing in conjunction with the Roundup, where they measure what are called the organic acids. And the organic acids are metabolic waste products from the microbes. And so the organic acids can give us an indication of the overall state of the ecology within the intestines. And so if you had elevations within Roundup, which are glyphosate, and you had a disturbed organic acid balance, along with some form of chronic disease, you know, and you present this to people in great numbers, you know, I think that we could potentially shame the politicians because the evidence could be so overwhelming that they would be forced to act. And outside of that, you know, the police state is there to stop any sort of, you know, alternative methods for dealing with this problem.
Well, and then people turn to organics because GMOs are prohibited there. But of course, we know there's contamination happening. And John Rappaport wrote an article, which you also posted, and it was about how the top shareholders in Whole Foods and Monsanto were identical. So let's say Whole Foods doesn't want to play ball, and then Monsanto wants to, you know, wants to kind of shame those shareholders or put them into place. And so then they could just make the stock prices drop until they do what they want them to do. It's just incredible.
Yeah, we got our work. We have our work cut out for us, for sure. For sure. And I don't know what else to do aside from just trying to raise the awareness. I mean, the marches, you know, I mean, it's kind of nice to see, but you know, what is that really doing right now? I mean, I personally like seeing what Hungary did to Monsanto's crops. I mean, the people of Hungary actually burned them when they
exactly when they're up there. Exactly. You know? We need that kind of stuff happening. I mean, like, that's, I'm saying, I think we have to use force in this case.
Well, maybe, you know, I mean, but you know, you got to be careful with what you say about those things right now, because
oh yeah, they'll show up at my door for saying that.
They'll show up at your door, and you know, they have the whole legal apparatus in place to just steamroll any resistance right now, particularly at the level that I think that we're at right now. I don't think we have sufficient numbers to deal with that, because what we need is when they start to, you know, go after individuals, you know, that are really generating awareness and a movement to stop some of this, we all have to rally around that one individual that gets targeted.
Yeah.
And without that, we're screwed. They'll just pick us off one by one.
Yeah, we have to back each other up, have some power in numbers.
That's a way we can do this, you know?
I also think it's getting so bad that we almost have to go in with like-minded people and buy up an area of land, as many people as possible, just claim a state and just block out all that stuff from coming in. You know, that's the way to do it.
I agree. I think it's a great idea. I mean, if New Hampshire wasn't as cold as what it is, I would be there.
Yeah, I know. Free State Project.
Yep.
I also want to look into the guys who came up with the money to back the GMO labeling ballot initiatives in California and Washington. I wonder who they are. Have you looked into those people at all?
I haven't, but you know, you're going to have this. It's the same forces that are that are involved with the banking industry. I mean, there's no doubt that there's a conspiracy going on. It's involving the financial system, and it's involving big agra and big pharma.
Yep.
They're all tied together, and they're colluding, and they're doing what they want to do. You know, if there's an important vote that comes up, they make sure that they get it. You know, they put us all in electronic voting machines, and if it's an important vote, they're going to make sure that it turns out the way that they want it, you know? So yeah, voting in many ways, it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know? But it's not our answer overall. We've got to figure out other strategies for dealing with it. And education and awareness are part of it. And I agree that people actually buying land in significant quantities and trying to take over, the local government and state government as best you can, and those sort of things look like they're possible in achieving. But outside of that, it's going to be really difficult, you know, because if you get control of the local and state governments, particularly like counties, and the sheriff, you know, you've got the legal authority and the power to start putting these federal criminals behind bars, you know, but that can only be sustained if you have sufficient amounts of people that are aware that that needs to happen locally.
Well, I agree that there's a conspiracy taking place before our eyes. There are people that are conspiring, and it's unfolding. So what have you kind of played around with ideas of what you think their end game might be?
It's about depopulation.
Yeah.
It's depopulation. Fundamentally, they want to get the population down. You know, if you're trying to destroy a population, well, what would you do? You know, you only have so many bullets. you want to do it in such a way that you're not going to destroy the place because you want to enjoy it yourself. So you find ways to destroy the body. And if you're trying to destroy the body, you destroy the immune system. So if you're trying to destroy the immune system, you have to destroy the gut, because the gut makes up 80% of your immune system. So, you know, the whole GMO issue is just one facet of it. You know, when you look at this whole issue of microglial activation, and the effects that it has, and how does the body actually, you know, defend against the overexcitation within the brain and this inflammation? Well, you know, there's a number of factors that contribute to that. one of the big factors that looks like it's actually playing a role in amplifying the effects of microglial activation is a depletion of melatonin, which is coming from electromagnetic smog largely. So yeah, the electromagnetic smog is actually shown to deplete melatonin. Melatonin is one of our body's most important antioxidants.
And you needed to sleep.
Yeah, you needed to sleep, absolutely. So there's multiple factors that we're getting hit with, and unfortunately, people definitely don't want to hear about the issue of the electromagnetism, because everybody's addicted to that.
Yeah.
Just like they're addicted to the foods that they eat. Yeah. You know, they've got us addicted to the things that are destroying us. They do.
It's a good plan, isn't it? Good plan.
It's a brilliant plan, you know? So, you know, there's considerable research to show that sort of thing's happening. And it's not like we don't have the technology to figure out, you know, ways to communicate with that aren't as toxic as what they are. So when you have that, then who benefits, right? Mm-hmm. Who benefits from all that?
I mean, we figured out how to go into space. I think we can figure out some of these details on Earth, you know?
Absolutely. So, yeah. So, again, the answers are there. And in my opinion, these things all just fit too conveniently together to be coincidence, you know, particularly in light of the fact that these people have stated publicly many times that they needed to get the population down.
Yeah, and it seems like America is really the target, because Europe's better about these things. Yeah, but they're also bringing it into like India and other places in the East, the seeds. So,
yep. I was going to say America represents, you know, at least on the surface. I mean, we have some of the constructs fundamentally of freedom and individualism here. And, you know, in terms of what the people in power really have in mind, they don't like that. So they want to destroy that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the reasons why I feel like we're under attack, because we have too many people that actually can think for themselves. Not as many as I would like, but we still have a fair amount.
Well, and now the other part of the equation is we've opened the door to basically third world mass immigration. And a lot of these people, unfortunately, don't even know what GMOs are or what Monsanto's up to. They just are willing accomplices, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree. And, you know, the issues of potential food shortages that may come from economic as well as environmental issues, I mean, it plays so conveniently into the hands of people that want control and seek control. And when you're allowing an open border into a situation where there's scarcity occurring, you know, in our nation, you know, that the people in power certainly understand the consequences of that and what a foolish thing that is to do for the people that are trying to thrive here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So I know this is a really hard question, but I mean, I've seen imagery too of cattle, for instance, that have consumed GMO corn for a long time, and they're, you know, after they die, their organs almost look like string cheese. So do you think that there's a permanent damage that's being done from eating GMOs, or is it something that we can counteract or fix if we've been eating that for several years? I know you keep mentioning the gut, but I just wonder if it's altering the organs somehow.
You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe some of those chemicals are doing that. My personal belief, based off of what I see with what's really breaking people down. So the gut is being disturbed by the disruptions in the ecology, and that allows for chronic low-grade infections to occur. And so when the intestines break down, the microbes migrate into the bloodstream. And as they migrate into the bloodstream, they're going to go find home in different tissues. You know, some of those microbes are not good, and the body will certainly initiate an inflammatory response to that. And so I suspect, you know, what you're describing is more of a consequence of how it's disrupted the gut ecology, allowing for the microbes to enter the bloodstream, which has initiated the immune system response that's destroyed the tissues. That's probably what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so it all, in my opinion, the core of this is really working to stabilize the integrity of the lining of the gut and the balance with our microbes. And you can't do that while you're consuming genetically modified food, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a meat eater, and I have to always be careful to get the grass-fed and organic whenever possible, because the animals are consuming GMO corn and grains and God knows what else. So it kind of is a bummer when you try and go out to eat. I try and find the restaurants that I know are non-GMO and organic, but it's slim pickings out there.
Yeah, good luck with that. You know, if you're doing that, you know, you go out, it's a good idea. It's a good idea to do it with every meal. You know, you take digestive enzymes and probiotics with your meals. Taking things like chlorella can help to bind to some of the toxins that are there.
Have you heard of zeolite?
Zeolite can be, yeah, of course. Zeolite's it's a good chelator. You know, it's going to help to bind to certain toxic elements.
Yeah, it's a negative charge, and I guess heavy metals and toxins are all, and chemicals are all positive charge, so it pulls it out.
It can, yeah, it's a great detoxifier in general. But yeah, and that could be one thing that you could use. You know, I recommend using like vitamin E when you eat out, because you tend to eat some things that have got some rancid oils in there. So popping this good vitamin E kind of protect you from the ill effects of that.
Well, so if we switch gears, because we're talking about heavy toxic burden, where does one begin this detoxification process?
Well, it's got to be cleaning up the diet. I mean, that's central to it. Now, I work with a lot of people that have chronic illness, and if somebody's entering into the office and they're unwilling to make changes to their diet, I mean, I just won't work with them. So number one is cleaning up the diet, and fundamental to cleaning up the diet is removing the big things that are gonna drive the inflammatory response, and that tends to be all the things that are genetically modified right now. You know, even if they weren't genetically modified, the good chance that they would still be a problem because of how they will affect the ecology, just how they, you know, the microbes will feed off of what it is that we put in there. And there's a there's a tendency to overconsume carbohydrates once we start to do it, you know.
And those are addicting too.
They're addicting, and the addiction is coming from how it affects the microbes, which are going to crave it, you know. I mean, we have to nourish our microbes. We're not just feeding ourselves. We have to think about nourishing our microbes. Our microbes are a major component of our immune system. So that's central to it. So the diet that I recommend that people go on is basically what's called the Paleolithic diet, which it sounds like that's kind of what
you're
following.
That's my diet. Yeah. Love it. Feel the best. I noticed with that one too, you have to be careful with the acid alkaline balance. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, you got to be careful with not. A lot of people that go and eat paleo, there's a tendency to overemphasize the meat consumption. So, in my view, you know, you wouldn't have the luxury from Paleolithic standpoint. You wouldn't have the luxury of eating an animal every day.
Yeah.
You know, so what you could do is you would be able to find vegetables with regularity. You know, and possibly some nuts, although I'm not a big fan of nuts for various reasons right now because of how they can disrupt the gut. But if your gut's in fairly good shape, you know, having some nuts here and there, even if they're not sprouted, I don't feel like it's too bad of a problem. But the big thing, if anybody's going to be healthy, they have to prevent anything that's going to alter the blood sugar in the wrong direction, the carbohydrates tend to do that. All the grains tend to do that.
High glycemic index foods.
Yep. That's, you know, those tend to be the things that you're going to get that are genetically modified too. So if you're eating paleo, and you're doing it with, you're getting your protein from things like protein powders, pea protein can be useful. If you don't have a sensitivity to dairy, whey protein is excellent. Provided it's from, healthy cows. There's different types of, protein powders that are on the market right now, which are really useful. Hemp is actually a really good one too. You know, that gets into the other discussion, you know, what hemp could really do for, you know, our health and our economy.
It's a fantastic fiber too. We could use it for everything to replace plastic and polyester, and even in your car, you can use hemp parts. It's amazing.
There's really seemingly no end to the utility of that plant. And that's another thing too. When you start to look at one of the big issues with chronic degenerative disease, you're looking at the effects of what occurs at the blood-brain barrier. You know, the brain should only allow certain things to be transported into it. And this lipopolysaccharide effect of the microglia activation is actually known to break down the lining of the brain. And as it relates to this issue of cannabinoids appear to have a regulatory effect on the blood-brain barrier. Our body actually produces cannabinoids. And so a lot of the effects that people are attributing to using medical marijuana is probably due to its relation on how it can influence things like the integrity of the blood-brain barrier, as well as the gut barrier as well. So this whole endocannabinoid system has a significant place in our overall health. And, you know, I did another blog post, you know, a while back, just talking about how I felt like cannabinoids were at one point going to be described as the other vitamin C, just because it looks like they're so important for our overall health.
Uh-huh. Have you looked into Rick Simpson's hemp oil cancer cure? We had him on a couple of years ago, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's going to be considered, you know, a true pioneer. He'll be recognized as a hero at some point for what he's done.
I think so too. I think you can get it now in Oregon. I have some friends over there, and they say that some of that stuff's been legalized over there. Hopefully the quality is good.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Rick had talked about, is that there's a lot of issues with the quality that's out there. But I know that you can find it in places in California as well as Colorado. So it's good to hear, you know. I mean, I think once people really understand that it does truly represent a legitimate cure for a number of forms of illness, you know, provided you do the other proper things with your body. I mean, I don't believe that you can consume cannabis oil and go and eat, you know, whatever it is that you want, and do whatever it is that you want with your body. But it looks like it's an important tool for regulating our body. And when we get into this state of chronic illness, particularly if you're talking about cancer, one of the things that becomes a problem is our body's ability to cause cell death, the cells that need to die. And research shows that the cannabinoids from THC, one of the things that they do is actually induce that destruction of the cells. It's called apoptosis. So, you know, you can somewhat read into that it's possible that cancer is at some level a deficiency of these cannabinoids.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because otherwise that wouldn't happen, right?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And then some people are like, yeah, okay, so now I'll just like smoke weed all day and just be blasted.
Whatever. That's not a good idea. You know, there's research too to show that people that are chronic pot smokers, that their brains looking at PET scans, it looks very much like somebody who's an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at some point in time, it may be that we're not using a foreign form. of the cannabinoids, because THC isn't exactly anandamide, which is what THC is working to basically mimic in our body. So it would probably be better if we had a bioidentical, you know, cannabinoid that we were ingesting that wouldn't necessarily cause some of the ill effects. So I know that's probably going to upset a number of people who listen to this who want to believe that simply smoking pot is going to take care of the problems, but I think that's foolish.
Well, I saw you also wrote an article about parasites, the epidemic that is here now. And then I've known people who've discovered them in their body. So what can you tell us about this?
Okay, well, that's a huge issue. And that ties into everything else that we've been talking about. Because when it comes to diagnostics, there's a huge problem for parasitic diagnostics that's out there. Commonly, if a medical doctor entertains the thought that a patient might have parasites, they commonly will only run one stool test. And one stool test alone is bad. The gold standard for identifying parasites is a triple sample of stool. So a stool test on 3 consecutive days. And then they analyze that underneath the microscope. And what they found was that when these clinicians were under the microscope themselves to determine, well, how accurate are you with people that we know that have these particular parasites based on previous testing? You know, how easily do you find them? Well, for certain types of parasites, the best that they could do was find them 60% of the time. And that's with 3 samples. And some of these parasites won't even show up at all on the stool test. You know, when people are looking at, when a lab is actually trying to identify parasites, they're looking at the poop underneath the microscope. You know, you imagine like all this digested food intermixed in with what are microscopic organisms in many cases, you know, it's difficult to do. So when you're dealing with disrupted gut ecology, the parasites they're all over the place. And so it becomes much, much easier for them to take residence within the body. And I'd say one of the more dramatic examples of this is some of the research that a woman named Carrie Rivera has done with regard to autism. She would be somebody that you should interview at some point. She was a mother of an autistic kid, and she's put together a protocol that, you know, it's been about 3 years, I think, that she's been using this, but now they've documented over 140 cures based off of some testing for autism. And a core element of their treatment protocols for parasites. And she talks about how some of these people that were doing this, you know, conventional lab testing with parasites, and these are labs that functional medicine practitioners commonly use. And she talked about one person in particular took a parasite that they actually pulled from their son's stool, put it in the stool sample that they were actually sending into the lab. It's clear as day that you know, her description of it was, you know, some of these parasites are very easy to see and recognize when they come out of you. And the lab test actually came back as negative, even with that in there.
Oh, jeez. I was like, did you have to test it after that? You saw it.
Well, you know, it was the reason why they did it was to see, you know, how accurate the lab is in terms of, yeah. And so I have a number of people that come in to see me who have actually worked with various doctors. And one of the more common things that I actually find are parasitic infestations.
Wow.
And so if you look at the situation where, okay, at best, they're going to find parasites 60% of the time. Okay. That leaves that, you know, at least 40% of the people that are going in there for like GI complaints, things that actually look like they're probably parasites, but they're just not showing up in the test. You know, conventionally speaking, they're not going to be treated. They're not going to be treated as if they have parasite. You know, so what do these people do? So clinically speaking, that puts us in a position if you're a clinician that wants to help people out, you have to start looking at different ways to actually assess the body. And again, one of the things that I utilize is a form of energetic testing to try and identify these things. And based off of that, I see that many people are dealing with parasites, even outside of having GI symptoms. I mean, fatigue is one of the big ones. But parasites can literally be associated with just about any form of illness, arthritis, fatigue being one of the bigger ones. But
I wonder if these parasites have mutated. If they're feeding off of us and we're feeding off of these Frankenfoods, is it altering them somehow? That's kind of creepy to think about.
Well, it's got to be. It's got to be affecting them somehow, you know. Ugh. How exactly, I don't know. But, you know, anytime you mess with Mother Nature at a fundamental level, Mother Nature is going to adapt. And the first place it's going to start to adapt is within the microbes. I mean, that's part of the reason why the microbes are reaching this point of, you know, total antibiotic resistance, you know.
Well, then I hope humans adapt, some of the fittest ones, and become even stronger at the end of all of this onslaught.
Yeah,
maybe it'll take evolution to a next level.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I believe that things don't look good. I'm actually optimistic that we're going to come out, you know, on the winning end of all this. How it's going to look, I really don't know, but I maintain a positive outlook on where things are going, despite, you know, my persistent awareness of just how bad things really are in a number of ways. But with knowledge, you know, we can turn things around. I mean, there's really smart people out there that have good solutions that just appears to be, seems like it's more of like a political blockade preventing a lot of these solutions from actually emerging for us.
Yeah, so. And also funding for research. We need some good billionaires out there who want to fund some good causes like this one, you know?
Well, you know, I've got connections with a guy here in Austin who he's making things happen. He's a young multimillionaire who has connections with billionaires. And he's telling me that he's getting some of these people to actually listen to his views on the need to actually make things happen. So that's encouraging.
Great.
But, you know, I think for many of us, it's not happening fast enough.
Well, Matthew, please give us your website details and tell us about your practice and anything else you have going on.
Okay. So the easiest way to find me online is drmattbuckley.com. And, so I practice here in Austin, and I have an emphasis on working with chronic illness, mostly because people just kind of find me because they read my story and read some of the things that I have on there. But I work with everybody and at any level of health, and my goal is to get people's bodies to work at their peak level, and so. I help people out with their diet, help them in optimizing their immune system and ridding it of a number of impurities, including the chronic infections that they may be dealing with. And yeah, that's what I do.
And it's kinseymindbody.com, correct?
Kinseymindbody.com. Yeah, that's that's the main link, but nobody ever seems to remember that. and I was kind of pushed into using that one because Kinsey.com wasn't available when I went for it. But yeah, Dr. Matt Buckley is probably the easiest way to find me.
We appreciate the free tips. So big thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it, and I enjoy listening to your shows too. So hopefully we can do it again sometime.
I know many of you are smart to avoid GMOs. So let's refresh what ingredients to avoid. The most common GMO crops are soy, cotton, canola, corn, sugar beets, Hawaiian papaya, alfalfa, and squash, zucchini and yellow. Many of these items appear as added ingredients in a large amount of the foods we eat, especially soy, so read labels. But of course, GMOs are also hidden in other food additives, such as high fructose corn syrup, maltodextrins, xanthan gum, yeast products, and natural flavorings. NonGMOproject.com is a good resource to verify non-GMO products. The best way to avoid these items is to cook from scratch and buy organic as much as possible. Find your local farmers and butchers and buy straight from the source. I know many of you know this stuff, but it's good to be reminded as sometimes we do become lax. I still like to repeat this info, though, as many newcomers are joining our radio programs every day who don't yet know. Have a terrific new year, have some fun with family and friends, and we'll talk again in 2015. Bye for now.